Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Winter is here, on television anyway. Game of Thrones is back for its final season on HBO, and according to The Hollywood Reporter, last season drew some 33 million viewers. Harvard professor Rasha Kirakosian says Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin got a lot of his inspiration from real medieval history. Kirakosian is a professor of German and a scholar of medieval mysticism and history at Harvard, where she teaches a course called The Real Game of Thrones, and she joins me now in studio. Welcome to Radio Boston, Professor.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we asked you here to talk about Game of Thrones, and I promise we'll get to that in a moment, but I do have to ask you about the fire raging at the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris right now, because it's a Gothic icon, and I know that you studied in Paris for a while. So I'm wondering if you can help give us some appreciation of what's at stake right now as firefighters try to save it.
Yeah, it's absolutely shocking and devastating news, and I just found out, actually, as I'm sitting here in the studio. It is, like you say, a Gothic icon that was started in 1163, not as the first Gothic church. The first one was Saint-Denis, just outside Paris back then. And it really developed until the 14th century, and in further centuries it continued to grow. And so Notre Dame itself can be seen as this laboratory for architects, artists, musicians, church people, clerics, this long-term laboratory. And so it is more than just a sign of radiating Gothic art. It is also a symbol for power, both for the Catholic Church, but also for the secular power. And you think about all the judgments that were made in Notre Dame Cathedral, and then and also Notre Dame Cathedral could be described as the very beginning of universities today. So that's really where the universities start, at the Notre Dame Cathedral schools. Of course, it's more complicated than that. But just to cut it short, it's absolutely devastating to see this burn, and the pictures alone just really, to be poetic, burn in my heart, right? It's very... very sad.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to watch, especially, I mean, of all times, during Holy Week, with given the symbolism of the cathedral for Catholics and Christians around the world. And, of course, you mentioned the art factor. There's a priceless collection of art there. And I was just thinking about how there's the fire itself, but also, you know, if you just douse it with water, the damage you could do as you try to save it as well. It just seems like an incredibly delicate situation right now.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure, I haven't had time to research how the French are dealing with it, but my heart goes out to the French right now.
All right. I do want to get to the reason that we brought you here, which is to talk about medieval history, your coursework at Harvard, and Game of Thrones. And I will just mention off the top that we are going to be talking about the show, but we won't get into the specifics of last night's episode, so no spoilers there. But there will be a little bit of a spoiler if you don't know anything about the show and you're just coming in cold. So let me just begin with this course that you teach. You got a lot of attention when you introduced it a couple of years ago, right? Yeah. Game of Thrones getting the Harvard treatment.
Right.
But remind us what goes on in the classroom.
Right. So this class called The Real Game of Thrones, Culture, Society and Religion in the Middle Ages, is neither a survey class on Game of Thrones nor a survey class on the Middle Ages. But actually, what I'm trying to do here is to take the curiosity for the Middle Ages that we see evoked in Game of Thrones, in the worldwide appeal with people watching it, and associating this often the so-called Dark Ages with it, and channeling this curiosity to actually inquire into our own world history, to take this as an opportunity to critically deal with phenomena of cultural appropriation of the past, of the medieval past, of narratives. And that also leads us to how during the Romantic period, medievalism meant that the Middle Ages were revived in an imaginary fashion. And also we also deal with phenomena such as Orientalism, and the connection between femininity and bestiality. So I really invite undergraduates to test and challenge their assumptions about the Middle Ages, because, you see, quite often they feel informed enough through fantasy and video games and historical fiction at best, but these forms of entertainment do not supply a filter for how to distinguish history from fantasy.
Yeah, I became an expert when I watched Disney's Sword in the Stone as a kid, right?
So it's fantastic.
The same thing. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, but it sounds like you're hoping that students will, you know, their interest in the real Middle Ages will be piqued by watching Game of Thrones. And we know that the show's executive producer and the author of the books it's based on, George R.R. Martin, did dive deeply into real history as he was creating this fantasy world. Here he is talking about his research process in a 2017 interview in Helsinki.
For Game of Thrones, I've totally immersed myself in reading histories of the Middle Ages and the Wars of the Roses, the Hundred Years' War, the Albigensian Crusade, all of the stuff that I thought I could steal from.
So it sounds like Martin basically took, you know, retook AP European history there before he got into the writing process. Where do you see that show up in Game of Thrones, the real stuff?
Right. So it's really hard to answer that because he doesn't align the historical model one-to-one in his world building of the show. And that's the thing about fantasy. It doesn't need to be accurate. It doesn't try to be accurate, right? So this kind of inspiration is the key word here. It's inspiration and stimulation, but not imitation. Just to pick one thing that he mentions in the interview, Wars of the Roses. So let's say it has inspired the plot that deals with the tensions between House Stark and House Lannister, which is the starting point from which the entire story of Game of Thrones unfolds. And the Wars of the Roses were a series of wars about the throne of England fought between supporters of two rival branches of the royal house, of the Plantagenet. And so they are called the House of Lancaster, associated with the Red Rose. And there you can already hear Lancaster and Lannister, right? That affinity. And the House of York, which sounds a lot like Stark, and of course, South and North also, that alignment. The conflict lasted through many sporadic episodes between 1455 and 1487, and there was fighting before and after this period, and this whole power struggle ignited around social and financial troubles following the Hundred Years' War. However, these plot lines infuse the world of Game of Thrones, but there's so much more to the world of Game of Thrones, so aligning it one by one is really hard. I mean, another example would be Hadrian's Wall and the Ice Wall, right? Mm. So George R. Martin says that he took Hadrian's Wall as an inspiration for the Ice Wall and just, you know, blowing it up literally and making it much bigger. And this is a formidable example, actually, to show how stimulation and inspiration does not mean imitation. Because Hadrian's Wall was a defensive barrier, yes. On the one hand, it granted to guard the northern frontier of the province of Britain from Celtic invaders. But on the other hand, it also signaled to the same tribes of north of the wall that the expansion would not stretch further. And actually, this Hadrian's Wall was what historians think to be a factor of economic boom, because movement was taxed. So movement across the world was actually welcome because it was taxed. And the Roman soldiers brought goods such as oil and wine, and they consumed goods and services that farmers, laborers, prostitutes, traders, and craftsmen were eager to supply, right? So it was not that isolated, sad landmark that the Ice Wall is in Game of Thrones, but it must have been buzzing with life.
So how does that translate for contemporary viewers now? Because the wall, is certainly very much in our news right now. So what should viewers of Game of Thrones perhaps be learning and thinking about as they process the news at the same time?
Well, that's quite a political question. Give me a moment to think about that. Well, what I would say is that, like any good fantasy world, the fantasy world can teach us more about our own world than actually both in the imaginary world. And that's why it is often so appealing, right, to see parallels to our own world. And there, the consumer is, of course, invited to be reflected about what we see, how it might resonate with our own world and what we can take from it, right? And the wall in particular, that's an interesting issue because some people have seen the Ice Wall in Game of Thrones as also a sign for climate change and sort of migration because of climate change, because we see in the early seasons how the so-called wildlings actually try to escape winter, right? And so try to actually mass migrate. And that is so linked to climate change. When we think about that, that's actually quite actual in our own world.
So there's a lot for us to learn and process and think about while we are also entertained.
Absolutely.
Rasha Kirakosian is a professor of German and the study of religion at Harvard, where she teaches a course on medieval history and Game of Thrones. Professor, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.